said, shaking her head, surprised she had not realized sooner. Their leader must be some kind of sorcerer. He hurls this bone rain at his enemies, and then, by the time the Mordants arrive, there's nothing left to fight. One of the ghouls was just a few feet away, and as she passed, it leapt at her. She dodged easily, lashing out with her knives as the spitting wretch stumbled on, spilling its blood across the dusty road. As the ghoul thudded to the ground, dozens more lurched towards her, grunting and grabbing pieces of wreckage. Trakos hammered two into oblivion, humming as he fought, and Malineth cut down more, but there were already hundreds spilling from the streets, tearing at each other in their frenzy to feed. Malineth and Trakos ran on along the one remaining path through the mob and reached the approach to the tower. Gotrek was almost at the doors, silhouetted by the light leaking through the walls, when something odd happened. The ghouls backed away, moving in unison, as though responding to a silent command. Malineth staggered to a halt, confused. What are they doing? The ghouls were acting as if they had regained control of their senses, shuffling together and even trying to form regimented lines, like an army of drunks attempting to look sober for a parade. Are they ghouls or not? Trakos waved her on.
It doesn't matter. We need to reach that tower. Volant will be waiting in the halls of separation.
Malineth shook her head as she studied the crowds.
It's like they're still human.
She gave Trakos a warning look.
Surely you, of all people, want to know what you're killing?
He slowed to a halt and looked around.
They're flesh-eaters.
The ghouls were still hunched, aberrant horrors, convulsing and snatching, but they were trying to form orderly lines, and none of them were making any attempt to attack. They had made a living colonnade down the length of the boulevard, and dozens more were joining their ranks every second. Malineth guessed that there must already be a few hundred. Gotrek halted and looked back at the grotesque parade, while Malineth and Trakos jogged towards him.
"What are they playing at?"
he demanded as they reached him.
"Why are they doing this?"
They both shook their heads and stared back down the boulevard. There was now a vast crowd of the flesh-eaters, huddled together in a strange semblance of order. Many of them still wore shreds of clothing, and some might have almost passed for normal, if not for their blank eyes and awkward jerking limbs.
"Maybe that's why,"
said Trakos, pointing his scepter towards the city walls. Malineth stared into the distant gloom, and saw what looked like a flock of birds soaring over the rooftops, heading straight for them. She quickly realized the truth. They were the huge bat-like things they had seen through Trakos's spyglass on the city walls. She heard their dreadful screeching cry echoing through the streets.
"Cain's blood," she hissed. "Not these things again."
"No,"
said Gotrek, jabbing his axe at the winged monsters.
"They're not the same."
He laughed as they flew closer and were lit up by the light of the tower.
"These are noble steeds."
The riders were straight-backed and proud, their chins raised and banners trailed from their saddles. Some wore pieces of broken barrel on their heads like crowns, and some carried pieces of wreckage on their arms as though they were shields. But their flesh was as ravaged as the figures lined up to greet them, and their bodies were just as gnarled and misshapen.
"It's the Ghoul King," roared Gotrek, grinning. "How regal he looks on his giant dead bat."
Malineth waved a knife at the expectant crowds of ghouls lined up in front of them.
"What would happen to these legions of flesh-eaters if you killed their noble leader?"
Gotrek raised an eyebrow.
"Interesting idea. We need to enter the tower," said Trakos. "Gotrek has sworn to guard the unburied until the prince and Losia have performed their spell."
Malineth shook her head.
"A spell that will save the unburied, but not necessarily us." They were notably vague on that point.
She pointed at the surrounding streets. Ghouls were shuffling closer from every direction, lining up with the others.
"Can you see how many of these things there are? And look over there."
She pointed further out into the city, back the way they had come. Columns of figures were marching beneath the Ghoul King, countless hundreds of Mordants arriving from the eventide. Gotrek sucked at his beard, frowning, considering her words. Then the light in the tower pulsed with renewed energy, scattering beams across the underside of the clouds, and a bell rang out, dull and tuneless, like the one they had heard when they first reached the borders of Morbium. They all turned to look at the building. It was like a coiled white tusk, peppered with circular windows. The smooth, honeycombed walls were made of polished bone, and as the light grew, the tower looked like a shimmering flame.
"Something's happening up there," cried Gotrek, scowling. "They're bloody starting without me."
He waved his axe at the army gathering behind them.
"There'll be plenty of time to deal with these morons."
With that, he turned and raced through the doors of the tower. Malyneth and Trakos followed him into an atrium, slamming the door shut behind them. The smooth, undulating walls of the tower contained no floors, only a single spiral staircase at its centre, surrounded by a wide, open, circular space. The staircase climbed to a central platform, hundreds of feet above, and the walls were hung with thousands of white, wing-shaped shields, all covered in lines of poetry. There was something eerie about such an enormous space, devoid of rooms or furniture, and bathed in purple light, and Malyneth paused for a moment, shaking her head. She felt as though she was in a dream. The light was coming from about halfway up the walls, where the shields were replaced by hundreds of cocoons that nestled in the curves, burning with inner light. After the noise and violence of the last few days, Malyneth was shocked to find that the tower was quiet. Other than the echoes of the bell, there was a strange, peaceful hush. The screeching of the terrorgeists had been silenced as soon as they shut the doors. It was as though they had stepped into another realm. She looked out through the nearest window and saw that the ruined city was still there, along with the crowds of ghouls, but their din had been silenced.
"Witchblade," said Trakos, rushing past her and heading up the stairs.
She snapped out of her reverie and saw that the Slayer was climbing up into the light, moving fast. Malyneth ran over to the staircase. The spiral was broad and shallow, but circling at such a pace still made her dizzy after a few minutes of running, and the building was so huge that she felt as though she was making no progress, turning without climbing in a soundless void. The bell rang out again. Inside the tower it was deafening, and Malyneth cursed, clamping her hands over her ears as the sound reverberated through her skull. Just as the ringing seemed to be fading, the wall of the tower caved in, slabs of bone and metal tumbling across the steps. Malyneth dropped into a crouch as a terrorgeist screamed into view, thrashing its wings and hurling broken masonry across the staircase. There was a ghoul on the monster's back, wearing a crown and a preposterous air of nobility. The rider carried a rusted, crooked spear, and it pointed the ridiculous weapon at Gotrek, who was still racing up the steps, not far from the circular platform at the top of the tower. A second terrorgeist smashed through the walls, causing more of the building to topple and revealing the rows of rooftops outside. The creatures were enormous and revolting, skin trailing from their bones in ragged shreds and rotten intestines snaking behind them as they turned. They both had the same pug-nosed, bat-like faces, and at a signal from the ghoul king, they screamed in unison. Malyneth howled, but her voice was lost beneath the screeching of the terrorgeists. Trakos had halted a few steps further up. He was shaking in pain, and the sparks around his helmet had grown worse, dancing across his pauldrons and down his chest armour. She managed to climb up towards him, still crying out as the terrorgeists whirled around them, screeching and pounding their wings. Trakos was struggling to stand, but she grabbed his arm and hauled him to his feet. He leant on her shoulder, almost crushing her with his armoured bulk, before righting himself and starting to limp up the stairs. Something hurtled out from the upper steps and slammed into one of the terrorgeists. The creature pounded its wings, trying to maintain its position as its rider stood in the saddle, straining to see what had hit its steed. "Gotrek," mouthed Malyneth, guessing the nature of the projectile even before she saw the Slayer clamber up the terrorgeist's neck, grin furiously, and slam his axe into its skull. Chapter 28. Rancor.
"Nia!"
cried King Galen, as the traitor beheaded her steed. Her drake slumped beneath her and plunged towards distant flagstones. Galen kicked his mount forwards, steering it after her. He hurtled past the steps at the centre of the tower, struggling to hold his reins. Nia's steed trailed crimson as it looped and fell, but he could still see his queen, hanging onto its ridged back. The traitor was there too, squat and heavy and gripping an axe almost as tall as he was. His head was shaven, apart from a central strip, greased with so much animal fat that the hair stood up in a flame-like crest. He was climbing over the dead animal even as it fell, still trying to reach near, drawing back his axe to strike again.
No!
Howled Galen, driving his drake towards the ground as he tried to ready his spear and take aim. His steed swooped low and slammed into Nia's drake seconds before it landed, sending all of them tumbling across the floor. Galen was hurled from his mount and thudded into the wall, losing his spear as he hit the stones. He sat there for a moment, too dazed to move, staring up at the hollow tower, trying to remember who he was. There was a circular window nearby that looked out onto the wide boulevard. His men were gathering outside, preparing to attack, and the sight of them filled Galen with pride. They had fought their way through the city with ease, and their chins were raised in triumph as they rode towards him, colours flying in the breeze. Behind them, his war machines were laying waste to the city, pulverising everything.
"Galen!"
cried Nia. She was lying a dozen feet away, at the foot of the stairs, pinned beneath her dead drake and struggling to breathe. He groaned at the sight of her, unable to hide his shock. She had been crushed. There was blood rushing from her armour, and her hips were twisted at a revoltingly unnatural angle.
"Galen!"
she called again. The traitor with the mohawk was on the other side of the stairs, looking equally dazed, massaging his face as he used his axe to lever himself back onto his feet. Galen rushed over to Nia and tried to shift the dead drake. It was impossible. The beast was the size of a full-grown oak. Nia reached up to him, no fear in her voice, only frustration.
"Damn it!"
she strained to move.
"Can you move it?"
He wanted to scream and pull away. To see his love like this was more painful than anything he could ever have imagined. But he knelt next to her, forcing himself to meet her feverish gaze.
"Why do you look at me like that?"
she croaked, struggling to breathe. The colour was draining quickly from her face as the pool of blood spread around her. She nodded, slowly, and settled back against the floor. Galen could think of nothing to say. A numbness seized him at the thought of life without her. She gripped his arm, smiling through her pain.
"We have almost done it, Galen. We are almost there. You are almost there."
There was a thud of boots as the hounds of Dinan entered the tower and dismounted. Their triumphant expressions faded when they saw Galen holding their dying queen. They stumbled to a halt, lowering their spears.
"Melvas and the others are here,"
he said, struggling to speak.
"Rest for a while, and I will come back for you when the traitors are dead. Then we will fetch the healers to—"
She silenced him with a horrific smile.
"No lies. I see the truth in your eyes. No healer can help me now. But I'm not afraid of death, Galen. This is all I ever wanted, to die in battle with you by my side. I would rather this than any number—"
Her words were interrupted by a violent coughing fit.
"I could never have been a king without you,"
he said. She tried to nod, but the coughing grew worse until she was choking. Her grip on his arm tightened, and she pressed her already blue lips against his skin, giving him a last long kiss. Then she lay back, still smiling, as her final breath rattled from her chest. Galen stared at her, his own breath stalling in his lungs. He gently touched her silver wedding ring, tracing the runes, remembering the day he had put it on her hand. Then he saw someone striding towards him across the atrium. Fury jolted through him, forcing him to take the breath he had been holding back. It was the barbarian with the crest of golden hair, the muscle-bound savage who had murdered his queen. Galen forgot his grief and lurched to his feet. He did not care who the strange-looking warrior was. Nia's murder would not go unavenged. He reached over his shoulder and found, to his relief, that rancor was still there. He drew the longsword and gripped it in both hands, feeling its sorcery pulsing through its handle. Then he rushed at the barbarian.
"King of the ghouls!"
cried the savage, laughing as he saw Galen coming towards him.
"Finally we meet!"
It was only now that he was so close that Galen saw how short the warrior was. He had an absurdly muscular frame, but his head only came level with Galen's chest. Galen had never encountered a Duardin before, but he was educated enough to know that this must be one.
"On your knees, murderer!"
he cried, drawing Ranker back to strike. The Duardin laughed again, clearly unimpressed.
"Are you trying to talk, with half your neck missing?"
Galen faltered, unsure what the barbarian was talking about. He touched his neck, but found no wounds.
"Tricks won't save you!"
he hissed. He hefted the ensorcelled blade with all the strength he could muster, aiming for the Duardin's mocking grin. The savage parried, but as the sword struck the axe, sorcery erupted from Ranker's blade, hurling him backwards in a storm of darkness, as though he were buried under gauzy black sheets. The Duardin cried out in annoyance as he tried to fight his way through the darkness. He swung his axe furiously, causing a flame to shimmer in the metal. But the harder he fought, the more dense the darkness grew, tightening around him like a net.
"Curse you!"
he roared, staggering from side to side, unable to free himself. Galen circled him, relishing the moment. Then he came to a halt, noticing something strange. There was a golden face embedded in the Duardin's chest, and as the warrior struggled to escape Ranker's sorcery, the metal mask pulsed with inner fire, glowing like an enormous ember. As the Duardin reeled back and forth, howling in outrage, Galen stepped quietly towards him, drawing back Ranker, feeling its seething power. The blade was charged with the might of the great wolf. It was blessed with sorcery so powerful it would cut through anything, even the golden rune. But as the rune light flooded into Galen's eyes, he felt a strange sensation. It was as though the breeze were blowing through his neck, rather than against it. He remembered the Duardin's strange insult, and reached up to touch his throat. His fingers brushed wet, torn meat. Cold dread gripped him, as though he were waking from a dream, but he still could not tear his gaze from the rune in the Duardin's chest. The light burned through his mind, twisting his thoughts, giving him the most peculiar sensation that he was not who he thought he was. Pain exploded in Galen's chest as a blade jutted out from between his ribs.
"No need to look so grave," whispered a sardonic voice in his ear.
He staggered forwards, and his attacker wrenched the blade sideways as he fell, tearing his flesh apart. Galen hit the floor in a fountain of blood and looked back to see a sneering elf standing over him, whipcord thin and clad in barbed, blood-splattered leathers. He tried to rise, but she put her boot on his chest, holding him down and waving a disapproving finger. He collapsed back onto the floor, dizzy with blood loss. The elf strolled away with the sprightly, elegant steps of a dancer, heading over to the Duardin. From where Galen was lying, he could see Nia's dead drake and the soldiers who had entered the tower. Only they weren't soldiers at all. There was something else. Grey, twisted horrors, with torn flesh and leering, lipless mouths. Rather than watching over their fallen queen, they were hunched over her steed, tearing hungrily at its flank, ripping its muscles, filling their mouths with blood. He could just see Nia's outstretched hand, mottled and grey, like rotten meat. Then he saw the wedding ring, glinting on her bloodless finger. With his last breath, he whispered her name. Chapter 29. Feeding Frenzy.
"Bloody wizards," muttered Gotrek,
as the darkness dropped away from him. He stamped on the shadows that tumbled across the floor and writhed away from him. Within seconds they had all faded, and he was left glowering at the flagstones. He caught sight of Malineth, still holding her knife, with the dead ghoul at her feet.
"Saved by an elf," he groaned.
She laughed at his ingratitude.
"Ah, but you're a charmer, Gotrek Gurnison. Humble and eloquent in equal measure. You always know just the right thing to say. Truly, you are a credit to your species."
He glared at her, embers dancing in his furnace-like eye. Malineth tensed and gripped her knives. Then a broad grin spread across Gotrek's face.
You're almost funny, he laughed, for a backstabbing elf.
She bowed with an exaggerated flourish.
I can but try.
One of the ghouls reared up from the dead horse, its throat jammed with meat and blood rushing down its skin. It reached out towards them, groaning hungrily. But before it could take a step, another mordant dragged it to the floor and began eating it, snarling and gasping as it ripped flesh with its teeth. Malineth and Gotrek watched, bemused, as the ghouls all turned on each other in a snorting, growling kill frenzy. They seemed oblivious to anything but the body nearest to them, and they quickly devolved into a heap of thrashing limbs and clawing fingers. Through the windows, Malineth could see the ghouls gathered outside in the boulevard, and they were all behaving the same way. They abandoned all pretense of being an army and turned on each other, lunging at whoever was nearest. Even the terrorgeists had joined the carnage, diving from the rooftops and devouring creatures they had previously fought alongside.
What in the name of Cain are they doing?
Gotrek watched the carnage, shaking his head.
Even ghouls usually manage to attack someone other than themselves. You killed their leader, called Trakos from the stairs above. These things have no minds of their own. They were only acting with a purpose because of that.
He waved his scepter at the ghoul king's corpse.
You have achieved what the prince asked of you. What do you mean? Said Gotrek.
He nodded at the cocoons up in the rafters of the tower.
They're not saved yet. You have saved them from the ghouls. The flesh-eaters will be so busy devouring each other, the Erebid will have no problem slaughtering them when Prince Voland summons them back out of the sewers.
Gotrek glanced at Malineth, and she gave him another exaggerated curtsy, delighting in the fact that she had done his job for him.
All that remains now is for Voland and Nosia to perform the rite they spoke of, she said, to fire up their magic stone and protect the Erebid from future invasions.
Gotrek looked up towards the top of the tower. The hexagonal platform in its eaves was shining so brightly he had to shield his eyes.
Let's get up there, before they get so excited they forget what they promised me.
Chapter 30 Deathwise. As they reached the building's upper levels, they found themselves surrounded by unburied. Malineth remembered what Losia had said about each cocoon carrying hundreds, even thousands of souls, and she marvelled when she saw that the walls were covered in countless hundreds of them. They were all cradled in niches of smooth bone, like seeds in an enormous white pod, and the nearer they were to the platform, the brighter they shone. As she ran, Malineth felt as though she were racing into the heart of a star, with giant embers tumbling all around her, burning as they fell. The platform was made of the same pale, translucent material as everything else, and shadowy figures were walking across the surface, passing back and forth above her head. They were still several minutes away from the platform when Malineth cried out in alarm and stumbled to a halt.
"Keep moving, elf!"
snapped Gotrek, glancing back at her. As soon as he saw what had happened to her, he stopped too.
"What are you doing?"
he demanded.
"Doing? I did nothing," she said, staring at her arms.
Her skin was naturally pale, but it had been transformed, turned into the same bone-like substance as the walls. Even her clothes had changed to the same material.
"This is what happened to you," she cried, pointing at the rows of cocoons. "When you joined yourself to those things. It's happening to you now, look!"
Gotrek exclaimed in annoyance. His leathery tattooed muscles now resembled dusty alabaster, as did the plate of armour on his shoulder. He stared at his palm, grimacing at the change in his flesh.
"Don't move!" called Trakos. "Don't move? What do you mean, don't move? We need to get up there!"
Gotrek turned to continue up the stairs.
"Remember what the priestess told you," said Trakos. "You're fragile in that state. Tread carefully."
Gotrek halted and looked back.
"And what about you?"
Trakos's armour was now the same chalky white as everything else. He shook his head, staring at his arms.
"Ha!" crowed Malineth. "Not so eternal after all. Tread carefully yourself."
The figures overhead suddenly rushed to one side of the platform, and the cocoons on the walls pulsed even brighter.
"Oh, sod this," grunted Gotrek,
and carried on up the stairs, but he was moving noticeably slower. The final stretch of steps opened into a fan shape as they led onto the platform. Gotrek, Trakos and Malineth walked out into the light together, shielding their eyes as they stepped onto the smooth, powdery floor, gripping their weapons. It occurred to Malineth that they were moving like old comrades in arms, standing side by side, trusting each other implicitly. As soon as she noticed this, she sidestepped away from the other two, muttering in annoyance. As Malineth grew accustomed to the light, she saw that her skin had regained its normal appearance. The others were the same. The transformation that had overtaken them on the stairs had ceased as soon as they stepped up onto the dais. There were a dozen people assembled on the platform. To her left was Lord Auron, flanked by six knights of the Gravesward. He looked like he was about to be crowned, chin raised, shoulders back, and eyes gleaming with pride. In the centre of the platform were High Priestess Losia, three other priests, and the towering shape of Prince Volant. The priests were standing in a circle around the prince, arms raised and hands clasped, and Volant was kneeling. It looked like he was holding an exploding star. Thousands of white moths fluttered around his hands, forming a ball of teeming, flashing wings. Gotrek opened his mouth, but before he could speak, Prince Volant's voice rang out through the lights. His words were cracked with pain, but still sure and proud.
"Deathwise we fly! Rescued from life and cradled by sod, from the tombs of fell-handed forefathers, red-scarred and charred, death-tongued and hale, we bring faith, we bring hope, we bring eternity."
Malineth wanted to announce their arrival, but the air was so heavy with sorcery that she dared not speak for fear of triggering some kind of transformation. Losia echoed Volant's invocation, and then the prince spoke again. His voice was lower this time, and more resonant, echoing through the shadows.
"Deathwise we fly, rescued from life and cradled by sod, from the tombs of fell-handed forefathers, red-scarred and charred, death-tongued and hale, we bring treasurelings, we bring gifts, we bring offerings to the deep, deepest dark."
This time the words had a dramatic effect. The cocoons in the walls pulsed, then grew dark. There was a pair of small braziers positioned at the top of the steps, and if it weren't for their flames, the whole platform would have been plunged into darkness.
"Those are not the words," said Losia, backing away,
breaking the circle and staring up at the prince.
"What are you doing?"
When Losia had loosed her grip, some of the moths had flown away, scattering over the platform and fluttering up into the spire of the tower. Volant looked up through the clouds of whirling insects, his face grim. Chapter 31. The Searment Stone. The prince was not wearing his helmet, and as he turned to face Gotrek, his eyes creased into a slight smile.
"You made it."
He ignored the confused-looking priests and walked over to the slayer.
"I hoped you would, but the odds were long. You are a unique individual, Gotrek Gurnison. A rare find."
Losia was staring at the dark cocoons on the walls, looking increasingly more outraged.
"What are you doing, Morn Prince? Why did you alter the rite?"
"You hoped I would make it," said Gotrek. "What are you talking about?"
Volant watched Gotrek with glazed, lifeless eyes. He looked like he was intoxicated.
"You hold the gods in the contempt they deserve."
He waved a dismissive hand at everyone else on the platform.
"When you said you had come to bring your fury down on Nagash, it made my heart sing, Gotrek. We are of a similar mind, you and I. And you have done great work, bringing these souls here."
He pointed at the small patch of darkness hanging in the center of the moths.
"I could never have managed this without you."
Losia and the other Erebid stared at the prince, mystified as he continued.
"This offering guarantees the future of the Erebid."
Gotrek shook his head.
"Offering?"
Volant looked sadly at Losia.
"We've kept our ancestors hidden for all these centuries, but now we are undone. The Lord of Undeath has harnessed a power beyond anything he has wielded before. We can no longer just cling to our prayers and hope to outrun the tide."
"What have you done?" asked Losia quietly.
"I have gathered hundreds of divine souls,
said Voland, glancing at the dark shape in the centre of the moths.
Souls that have eluded Nagash for centuries.
Lord Orin glared at the Morn Prince, gripping his scythe with such fury that his arms were shaking. Malineth looked at where Voland had been kneeling and saw a shimmer of purple in the ball of moths. It was a gemstone, faceted and dark.
Do you mean that the Searment Stone will preserve the unburied? Said Losia.
Prince Voland shook his head, suddenly seeming tired. He massaged his scalp as he paced across the dais, distorting the intricate tattoos on his face.
Nothing preserves life except power. I see that now. For a long time I thought there might be another way. But now I see that the only way to gain freedom from the gods is to buy it. Prayers, devotions, ancestor worship, it's all meaningless. But offerings win the favour of any god. And thanks to this Duardin, the Searman Stone has captured more souls than I could ever have hoped. And now it will send them to Nagash.
Nagash?
Gasped Losia, glancing over at Lord Orin, her face drained of colour.
Seize him!
Howled Lord Orin, pointing his scythe at the sorcerer.
He's a traitor!
Orin and the Gravesward rushed forwards, weapons raised, but Prince Voland shook his head despairingly at them. Just as they were about to reach him, he lashed out with his scythe, slicing through armour and hurling his attackers across the dais. The knights stumbled and fell, clutching their throats and chests. There was a loud clattering as scythes and shields bounced across the floor. Orin leapt to his feet and attacked again, but Voland clubbed him down, towering over the knight and pummeling him with the haft of his scythe. The prince looked around at the gasping knights, then nodded and addressed Gotrek again.
This tower is linked to Nagash's own citadel, and I have now linked it to the Searment Stone as well. I have all the souls I need to complete the ritual. I can now do as I promised and send you with them. You can finally confront your past.
What?
Gotrek shook his head.
Why? Why would you send your ancestors to Nagash after everything you people said about your forebears?
The prince's expression darkened.
Morbium is gone,
he waved dismissively at Lord Orin.
No one else here has the sense to see it, but I realized the truth weeks ago, months ago, and I've been living with it ever since, knowing that everything we have worked for all these centuries has come to nothing, knowing that every one of the prominence will sink beneath the eventide. It shamed me, Gotrek Gernison.
His voice cracked.
I was going to be the one Morn prince who failed to preserve his bloodline, and the one ruler of Morbium who let memories be lost. The great necromancer was going to take everything, every trace of our past. At first I thought there might be a way to find an offering outside Morbium. I employed shrivers to scour the princedoms, looking for a gift that would be fit for a god, some way to buy our safety. But it was hopeless. What single individual would satisfy Nagash? I needed more. Only the unburied would appease the great necromancer. These souls that have eluded him for so long.
Curin,
laughed Malineth.
He was working for you.
She looked triumphantly at Gotrek.
I told you that conjurer in Klemp was a fraud. He was fishing for victims to send to Nagash.
I bet he was delighted when he heard you say you wanted to go to him. Gotrek glared at her, but Voland did not hear Malineth's words, too intent on justifying his actions to the Slayer.
Once the rite is complete, he continued, Nagash will take ownership of the unburied. The Searment Stone will send every one of them to him. The Lingering Keep will sink beneath the waves like all the other prominents, and every soul will go to the necromancer. Then I will be Nagash's servant, said Gotrek, his lip curling in disgust.
I serve no one,
snapped Voland, finally losing his veneer of calm. All around the dais, the Gravesward were clambering to their feet, clutching wounds, but the prince ignored them.
For now, he said, his voice still taut, Nagash has the upper hand. But let the centuries pass, and Sigmar will hold sway, or maybe some other god that has yet to emerge from the ether void. Who knows? What matters is that as the gods rise and fall, the bloodline of the Morn Princes will endure. With the souls of the unburied, I have bought myself safe passage. I have bought a chance for at least one of the Erebid to escape the Nadir. I will survive and begin again.
Losia hissed a curse and moved to attack, but her acolytes held her back as Volant raised his scythe, saving her from being cut down. Gotrek looked thoughtfully at the struggling figures on the dais, considering the prince's words.
If you're sending these souls to Nagash to buy yourself peace, why would you send me? I'm not after peace. I'm not some willing victim. I came for vengeance.
Volant shrugged.
And I believe you might find it.
He peered down at Gotrek.
Your soul has been altered. You are more than mortal, but better than a god.
He shook his head.
I have no idea what you are, but perhaps you will destroy Nagash. Perhaps that is why you were brought to these realms, to end all these schisms and power plays. I'm sending these souls to buy freedom from tyranny. But if you destroy Nagash, there will be no tyranny.
And if I fail to destroy him?
Then I have presented the arch-necromancer with an even greater present than I promised. Your soul would be the jewel in his crown. What matters is that I will be far away, taking my bloodline beyond the reach of arrogant, self-absorbed gods.
Trekos unclasped his hammers from his belt and tensed, ready to attack, but then paused and looked at Gotrek, as if waiting to see how the Slayer would respond.
Is Gotrek our leader now? Wondered Malineth. Is that what we have come to?
The idea appalled her.
Do we just follow him, whatever he decides to do?
She was struggling to understand why, but both she and Trekos seemed to be in Gotrek's thrall.
Strike him down, then! Stick a knife in that fat neck! Try another poison!
Malineth shook her head. There was such a powerful, momentous feeling in the air that she could not bear the idea of ending this scene before it had been played out. She had to know what would become of the Slayer, and of the Erebid.
People have been promising they'll get me to Nagash since I arrived in this wretched hole, snarled Gotrek. So far it's come to nothing.
Volant waved Gotrek over to the cloud of moths and pointed to the gem at its centre.
Place your hand on the Seaman Stone. I'm about to finish the ritual. The stone will send you to Nagash-Jizar. You will see Nagash today. Have your vengeance, Gotrek, or answers, or whatever it is you seek.
Gotrek stepped closer, reaching out to touch the stone.
Gotrek!
Cried Trekos, finally breaking his silence.
This man is a...
Volant whispered, and amethyst light leapt from the stone, blazing around his scythe.
This stone is part of me,
he shouted.
I'm bound to it and it to me.
He swung the blade, hurling purple flame.
Together, we are invincible!
Trekos staggered, clutching his gorget, bathed in light. He dropped to his knees with a clang, sparks tumbling down his chest. As he struggled, the purple lights grew brighter, eating into his armor, causing him to convulse and kick. Malineth shook her head. For a long time she would have gladly watched the Stormcast Eternal die, but not at the hands of this pompous prince. There was nothing she hated more than someone who lied better than she did.
Gotrek,
she said. But before she could get any more words out, Volant lashed out again, hurling more light. Pain knifed into her throat, and she dropped to the floor beside Trekos, unable to breathe. Gotrek glanced back at her, his expression blank. As she clawed at her throat, feeling the strength drain from her limbs, the Slayer studied Prince Volant. For what seemed like an age, Gotrek looked from Volant to the stone and the people dying on the dais.
I've been in these realms for months, he said finally, and I'd given up hope of finding anyone who thinks like me.
Malineth felt a rush of hopelessness as Gotrek placed his hand on Volant's shoulder.
And now, in this lightless pit, I see that I was wrong to despair. Not everyone in these realms is as stupid as I thought.
Malineth's vision grew dark as her oxygen-starved brain lost hold on reality. She pictured scenes from her past, from the Cainite murder temples where she had learned to pray through violence, and the halls of the Azurite Scholars, where she had first understood the power of Sigmar's storm hosts. The scenes merged and coalesced as her consciousness slipped away. Gotrek smiled at Prince Volant. Then he smashed the searment stone with his axe, hurling crimson shards through the air. Volant roared and reeled across the platform, clutching his face. Moths whirled around Gotrek's axe, flashing against the fire steel. The walls lit up as the cocoons pulsed back into life. Malyneth managed to gasp a choking breath as the flames dropped away from her. With fragments of the searment stone still tinkling across the floor, Gotrek strolled after the howling prince.
"I thought these realms were blind to the things that really matter," he said. "But the people of Morbium have proved me wrong. They value tradition. They respect their ancestors. They record every detail of their past. They believe in something. They believe hard enough to fight and to die for it."
Losia, Trakos and the others were still gasping for breath and trying to sit as Gotrek reached Volant and pointed his axe at him.
"And they deserve better than to be betrayed by their own lord."
He glanced at Malyneth.
"I was wrong. Whatever I've lost, there are still things worth fighting for. Even here."
Volant had fallen to his knees, and cracks had spread over his face. He looked like he was about to be sick.
"I placed all of my power in that stone."
His voice was a strangled hiss. He glared at Gotrek.
"You will rue the day you..."
His words were cut off, along with his head, as Losia's scythe slammed through his throat. Chapter 32. A Thing of Value. Gotrek stood brooding over Volant's shattered remains, passion burning in his one good eye. The prince looked like a broken vase, hundreds of pale shards, each showing a jumbled glimpse of his face. All around the dais, people were climbing to their feet, gasping and coughing and struggling for breath. Malyneth gave Trakos her hand, and Losia's acolytes rushed to steady the priestess as she staggered away from the prince's corpse, staring at her bloody scythe. Lord Auron and the Gravesword grabbed their weapons and dusted down their armour.
"You could have gone with him to Nagash."
Malyneth was, once again, baffled by the slayer's behaviour.
"You could have fulfilled your destiny. You could have met your doom."
Gotrek nodded, staring at Volant's splintered corpse, his expression grim.
"Aye."
Trakos walked across the platform and stood next to the slayer. His breath was wheezing inside his helmet, and he was clutching the rent in his neck armour. But he managed to stand straight, and there was no sign of the tremors that had troubled him before.
"I thought you and the prince were of one mind," sneered Malyneth. "I thought you would see yourself in him."
In the harsh light of the unburied, Gotrek's face looked more weathered and beaten than ever.
"I did. I did see myself in him. And I did not like what I saw."
"What do you mean?"
asked Trakos. Gotrek shrugged.
"He cared for nothing but his own future. He was deluding himself that he was fighting for his race, but he was just a coward. I might not have been so sure."
He turned towards Lord Auron and Losia.
"If I'd not seen your bravery."
He placed his hand over the rune in his scarred chest.
"The gods haven't tainted everything. Not yet. So perhaps I was sent here to..."
He shook his head.
"Perhaps I came here to do more than die."
They all fell quiet again as Gotrek wrestled with his thoughts. Even Malyneth felt reluctant to interrupt.
"What about your old friend?" she said after a while. "Felix, was it? He wanted you to come here, didn't he? And face Nagash?"
Gotrek scowled.
"Maybe the wizard in Klemp was tricking me. He did have the look of a charlatan. Or perhaps Felix wanted me to come here to stop Prince Volant."
He lowered his voice.
"Besides, the manling is dead. Long dead. Which makes me a gullible fool."
Losia spoke up, looking at Gotrek with newfound respect.
"You've saved the unburied. You've saved all of us. But what will we do now?"
She was addressing him like a subordinate requesting orders.
"The city is still conquered.
If everything Volant told us is a lie, then there is no rite that will save them. There is no new iron shroud. She looked at the shards of Searment Stone. The Mordants are everywhere, and we have no way to escape them.
Then we make our stand here,
said Lord Auron in strident tones. We will not abandon a single soul. We will hold this tower until our dying breaths. The lingering keep is not lost while we live.
The Gravesward clanged their scythes against their breastplates, but Losia looked doubtful.
Think, said Auron. Most of our men should have reached the sewers before the rain hit. I can muster them. However many Mordants there are out there, they will have a hard fight making it up these stairs, with 1,000 archers firing down on them, and a shield wall waiting at the top.
One of the knights saluted.
I will sound the horns, my lord.
Wait,
said Gotrek, halting the knight before he reached the stairs. He looked at Auron.
The halls of my ancestors were filled with the corpses of warriors who died defending their homes. It is an honourable way to die.
Auron tilted his head in a slight bow.
You have given us another chance, Slayer. Whatever the odds, we will fight on.
Gotrek nodded.
You are brave and honourable. But,
he shook his head, frowning,
perhaps like me, you can do more than just die with honour. I never expected to find anything of worth in these realms. People of worth. And now that I have found a thing of value, I wonder if there is a way to preserve it.
Auron shook his head.
We will not abandon our ancestors.
Nor should you. But perhaps you could abandon something else.
Gotrek was staring into the middle distance, his expression rigid.
I come from a proud race, as proud as your own. And in our pride, we refuse to change. We refuse to move on.
He glanced at the rune in his chest.
And we died. All that pride, all that wisdom, sacrificed for bricks and mortar.
He waved at the building around them.
For towers like this. To honour the past is good and right, Lord Auron. But to be enslaved by it is another matter.
What are you suggesting?
Asked Losia. Gotrek pointed with his axe at the rows of cocoons that lined the tower walls.
Your duty is to the unburied, not this city. And the unburied can be moved. You could die here, fighting until the end, and by Grungni I would honour your memory for doing it. Or you could take them away and find a new place to live. Find a new way to live.
How?
Demanded Auron.
Where could we go?
Gotrek shrugged and waved at the ruins outside, smoking and crowded with feasting ghouls.
What could be worse than this? And now Nagash has thrown your borders open to the other princedoms, there will be plenty more ghouls coming your way. Along with any other army that happens to be passing.
Malaneth shook her head.
Even if we could fight our way to the gates, the wynds would be crawling with Mordants. How could we go anywhere?
Gotrek looked at Trakos and raised an eyebrow.
Yes?
Trakos's voice was hoarse but confident.
I can do it.
Do what?
Demanded Malaneth, irritated that they seemed to be sharing secrets. Gotrek turned back to Auron.
When we first reached the city, we spoke to someone in the chapter house, a captain. He spoke of strange happenings at the docks.
Captain Riddens, yes. He said something had triggered the old Caradron engines, the ether ships. He said they lit up.
Auron looked at Trakos.
You said you might be responsible.
Trakos nodded.
At the barren points, I ignited power lines that run beneath the whole of the Eventide. They date back to whenever the princedom was first colonised.
So the ether ships are working again,
said Losia.
Could you pilot them?
They might be working. Some of them, at least.
Losia gripped Gotrek's arm.
Then we could cross the Eventide. With the Iron Shroud gone, we would be free to cross the Underworlds. With you to help us, we could find a new home, another corner of Shaiish, far from the Mordants.
Gotrek gave a grim laugh.
I've seen this realm. You won't like it. But there are other places.
He nodded towards Malaneth and Trakos.
Places where people like this hold sway, rather than Nagash.
Lucia shook her head. But could we reach the docks? She looked out through a window. Seen from so high, the city was like an ant's nest, teeming with life, as mordants flooded from every direction.
Have you noticed that none of them are attacking us? Said Malineth. Since I killed their king, I mean.
Trakos nodded.
They are leaderless. They are no longer an army. They'll still try to chew your face off, grunted Gotrek. But they're quite busy killing each other. We shall be able to cut a path through them once you muster your men.
Lucia, are there any reason the unburied can't be moved?
Lord Oren said. She seemed dazed by the direction of the conversation, but she shook her head, waving to her acolytes.
We could perform the necessary rituals. It would take a few hours, but it can be done.
And then perhaps we could save them, muttered Oren.
Gotrek stretched, rolling his massive shoulders and arching his back, causing the face in his chest to glint in the torchlight.
I gave you my word I'd save them.
He clanged the haft of his axe on the floor and unleashed one of his terrifying grins.
And I keep my bloody oaths.
For someone who professed no interest in religion, Malineth was constantly surprised by Gotrek's unshakable faith. He believed resolutely in his own indestructibility. He wore self-belief like a suit of inch-thick plate. He marched back out into the city like he was taking an evening stroll, with nothing more pressing on his mind than finding a tavern. There were hundreds of ghouls crowded into the boulevard, thousands more in the surrounding streets, and he was blind to all of them, leaving the Gravesward to cut them down as he chatted calmly to Lord Oren, asking for directions to the docks and discussing options for a destination. As they walked and talked, Malineth noticed how animated Oren was becoming. Despite everything that had happened, despite the destruction all around him, he seemed excited. Gotrek had no trace of diplomacy, no tact, no desire to be political, but he had turned the Erebid noble into an eager convert and given him hope in the face of ruin. Behind them, Erebid priests hauled their ancestors into the streets, abandoning centuries of religion on the word of a one-eyed Duardin with an ale-matted beard and a face that looked dredged from a wreck.
How does he do it? Muttered Malineth.
Trakos was a few paces behind her, readying his hammers as the ghouls started to gather, sniffing the air and slavering.
He's headed somewhere, he said. It's written in his face.
To his grave,
she said. But she could not make her cynicism ring true. She knew what Trakos meant. Everyone else was limping through life, but Gotrek was charging. She drew her knives and grinned, wading into the fight. Chapter 33 Ghost Ships. Gotrek staggered down to the quayside, wiping sweat from his face and laughing. He glanced back at Trakos, who was a few paces behind him, cleaning blood from his hammers.
On my oath, manling, what a sight! That's the most glorious thing I've seen since falling into these wretched hells.
Trakos looked up from his hammers and nodded in agreement. Arrayed before them, glimmering in the darkness, were six vast edifices, colossal Duardin faces, wrought of metal and wearing coats of faded, peeling paint. The figureheads towered over Gotrek, grander even than the one on the Spindrift, and just as ferocious. Savage, battle-hungry Goliaths roaring in silence, lit up by the fires of the burning city. They were of a different design to the Spindrift. They looked more like traditional ships, but were forged of iron and brass and topped by enormous metal spheres. Runes were painted across the hulls, and mechanical weapons bristled from every gunwale. Gotrek placed his hand on the first prow he reached, patting the ancient riveted metal with a low, resonant clang.
I don't have much time for the Claradron, but this is impressive. Proper, sturdy engineering. Almost reminds me of honest, well-crafted dwarf work. It will do me good to travel this way.
Lucia followed him to the ship, and over the next 10 minutes, hundreds more people poured down onto the quayside. Civilians and priests, flanked by lines of Gravesward, fleeing from the carnage behind them. The lingering keep was aflame. As buildings had collapsed, destroyed by the confused, rampaging ghouls, fires broke out, whipping through the corpse-filled streets and engulfing the city's temples and townhouses. The tower where Prince Voland had died had collapsed not long after the Gravesward removed the unburied. The whole structure had been weakened by the terrorgeists, and there was now a column of whirling dust and embers where it had once stood. Lord Auron had seemed reinvigorated since Gotrek suggested leaving the city. He had taken command of Prince Voland's armies without a moment's thought, ordering them to form a defensive perimeter around the docks until the city's surviving civilians had made it down to the quayside. The Bone Rain had massacred many of the refugees, and the ghouls had killed even more, but there were still thousands of people left to swarm around the ancient ships, filling the air with a panicked clamour, laden with belongings, and, in the case of the priests, cradling the cocoons that held the unburied.
"Not much of a fight, eh?"
said Gotrek, as Lord Auron made his way through the crowds. Auron nodded.
"They seem more interested in destroying each other than attacking us."
"They are only the beginning," said Trakos, his tone bleak. "I have seen this happen in other underworlds. First come the creatures you call Mordants, and then, once the kingdom is in tatters, the spirit hosts arrive, led by Nagash's own generals."
Auron looked back at the flames.
"I understand. The princedom is gone. I knew that the moment I heard Prince Volant's lies. It is time to begin again."
Losia gazed up at the vast, furious face that loomed over them.
"But can we really leave? What will you do? How do we make them sail again?"
Trakos headed over to a ladder that reached up the side of the hull.
"If these ships still have ether gold on board, as the Spindrift did, we should only have one problem."
He started to climb, his Sigmarite boots hammering on the ladder's metal rungs. Gotrek nodded, looking pleased with himself. Then he frowned, staring up at Trakos.
"What problem?"
Malaneth might have been imagining it, but she thought she heard a trace of humour in Trakos's reply.
"The conduits. They will most likely have corroded, as they did on the Spindrift. We'll need some way to channel the fuel."
He hesitated.
"A powerful piece of ergold would do it."
Gotrek looked at his chest rune with a furious expression, preparing to howl an insult at Trakos. Malaneth started to laugh.
"Your Celestial Highnesses, forgive the break in communication, but after leaving Klemp, the Slayer's quest to find Nagash took a strange turn that led me beyond the reach of even the most dedicated Azurite agents. I will spare you the details, at least until I return to Azir. But suffice to say, I am still in Gotrek's company, as is the Stormcast Eternal, Lord Ordinator Trakos. We have finished our delightful sojourn in the Amethyst Princedoms, and are now on the road to a stormkeep recommended by Trakos. It is a large fortress known as Hammerskald, where I hope to find a messenger who can carry this missive to you. I find it hard to explain exactly how this has come to pass, but we will reach Hammerskald, travelling in a fleet of ancient Caradron ether ships, with a dispossessed nation trailing in our wake. The entire population of a forgotten underworld has adopted Gotrek as their holy saviour. Since leaving their homeland, many of their priests have painted stripes on their heads in mimicry of his greasy mohawk, and soldiers have hammered their weapons into new shapes in an attempt to make them resemble the Slayer's axe. It is singularly the most absurd thing I have ever seen, pale-faced waifs in their hundreds attempting to emulate the heavy tread of an inebriated Duardin. By all the gods of all the realms, I swear that I have no idea how such a thing is possible. But along with the absurdity of it, I sense something else. It is hard to explain, but I sense a significance to all of this that I cannot quite explain in words. I imagine you now think me as deluded as the refugees. But if you could see him, hauling an entire diaspora through these ruined hells, you might understand. He has an inexplicable magnetism. He attracts people as easily as he attracts flies. They are drawn to him, caught in his trajectory, convinced he can help, even though he is so clearly unable to help himself. He takes no pleasure in it, mind. Where others would delight in such adoration, Gotrek considers it an inconvenience, hurling abuse at his followers, demanding they leave him in peace and stop asking him so many questions. If it weren't for the alcohol they keep offering him, I think he would have jumped overboard days ago. He has clearly come to regret his newfound altruism. I imagine we will leave Hammarskjöld without this fervid host in tow. But I digress. The master rune is still safe, but I feel no closer to convincing the Slayer that he should return with me to Azir. I had hoped he might do so as soon as we reach Hammarskjöld, but I am troubled to report that he is now in the grips of a new obsession. Despite the dreadful ordeals we endured in the princedoms, he seems to have quite abandoned his mission to face Nagash. He now assures me that he can fix the mortal realms if he can lay his hands on an axe he once owned. Apparently, the enormous Fire Slayer great axe he currently wields is not impressive enough. He says it hinders his ability to teach the realms any bloody sense. So he has set himself the challenge of retrieving a weapon that probably never existed beyond the addled confines of his own ale-steeped brain. I am painfully aware that my return to Azir is terribly overdue, Your Highnesses, and I imagine that you have despaired of me ever bringing you the rune. Perhaps you have even sent other agents of the Order to replace me and complete the job. But I will give you this warning. The Slayer will not be fooled, bought, or strong-armed. For all his hatred of gods, he is the closest thing I have ever met to one. I have still to decide if he is a tragic simpleton or the greatest hero of the age. But whatever he is, I am closer to understanding him than anyone else alive. And I am therefore your best chance of harnessing the rune for Sigmar's crusade. For Cain and the God King, I swear I will find a way to claim this elusive prize. And while doing so, I shall also endeavour to solve the infuriating enigma of Gotrek Gurnesson. Your most loyal and faithful votary, Malineth Witchblade.
That was Ghoulslayer, a Gotrek Gurnesson novel, by Darius Hinks, read by Jonathan Keeble. This recording is copyrighted Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.